Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest tonight is Rachel Donner. Rachel, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to talk about Voyager.
Yes.
But before we start talking about this episode of Voyager, tell the folks a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm mostly sporty Spice. I have a hockey podcast called Hockey Feels, which I co-host with Steven Schepansky, and he is an Oilers fan, and myself is a Flyers fan. Uh-huh. Wax nostalgic about the good old days of our teams and hope that they get better soon.
I have seen two hockey games in my life, both of which I attended in person, and one of which was a Flyers game. And one of which was an Islanders game, I think.
Hmm.
But that's neither here nor there. But I am, if I had to pick a Spice Girl, which I think we have to do, I guess I would be Posh Spice. Why not?
Nice.
I don't know. I have nothing to base that on, but...
I am definitely partial to Sporty Spice in general, but also because she happens to be my birthday twin, like same year and everything.
Oh, that's impressive.
Yeah,
I don't think I know any Spice Girls' birth dates, but I do like the Spice Girls, so nothing against them. Very catchy. So I like the Spice Girls. I like Star Trek. I assume that you like Star Trek, but would you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
Absolutely. I started watching it when I was a kid. I think my dad got me into it with the original series reruns.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure he had seen them, you know, on air as they originally aired, or at least some of them, and then kind of got me into the reruns. And then I got super excited about Next Gen and watched that entire series. And Star Trek IV was the first movie I ever saw in the movie theater more than once. I saw it four times.
That's appropriate.
Yes.
Is Star Trek IV your favorite Star Trek movie?
I think so. Yeah.
Even you like it better even than Star Trek II?
Yeah.
This is bold.
Interestingly, I did not see Star Trek II until much, much later. I did not. Yeah, I don't know if like maybe my parents thought it was like too serious for me. Oh. And they didn't want me to see Spock die. I don't know.
It could be upsetting.
Yeah.
Also, spoiler alert, Spock dies.
Spock dies. I love Wrath of Khan. I really do. It's just I think Star Trek IV kind of warms my heart the most. And it just has these little moments that gravitate.
Oh, I love Star Trek IV as well. Yeah. It's probably my second favorite Star Trek movie, second only to Wrath of Khan.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that we actually covered Star Trek IV on Random Trek a couple episodes ago for folks who want to hear me talk more about Star Trek IV. But it's fantastic. It's funny. The funny one. And I actually recently watched Star Trek V, which is not so funny.
No.
And not so good. But
yeah. And I think you'll find in our discussion that I may not like the things that most people like the most.
Well, that's
that's why Star Trek IV is my favorite.
I'm intrigued by this. I feel like Star Trek IV, though, is pretty highly regarded. And in fact, I think if you bar the J.J. Abrams Star Treks, I think it may have made the most money of any Star Trek movie. So,
well, I saw it four times, so there you go.
You contributed to that.
Yes, I did.
I'm pretty sure I saw it in the movie theater, but I think I only saw it once in the movie theater. But I have seen it since innumerable times, so...
Yeah, and I quote it to this day.
So what's your favorite moment in Star Trek IV?
I like that they are not the hell your whales. I don't know why, but that line just kind of sticks in my head.
It's because it is awesome. I enjoy watching Chekhov and Uhura ask people about where they keep the nuclear vessels. That amuses me every time I see it. Even thinking about it makes me chuckle, so... Oh, Star Trek IV. But we're not here to talk about Star Trek IV, but we'll transition to Voyager shortly. But if you had to pick, so I've made you pick a favorite Star Trek movie.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Star Trek series. If you had to pick one, because someone on a podcast was asking you,
yes,
what series would you say is your favorite series?
Okay, so there's two answers to that question. Ooh. The first is objectively and practically, Deep Space Nine is the best.
I agree with this.
and, you know, plot wise, I think well-rounded characters, you know, good aliens, good dynamic, good addressing of social issues as Star Trek is wont to do. I feel like Deep Space Nine does all of that. And it's the, I think, the almost perfect package as a series. That being said, Voyager is my favorite.
All right. Well,
and nobody thinks Voyager is the best or is their favorite.
I've had a few people who think that Voyager is the best, mostly women, which I think is interesting because obviously Janeway is the first woman captain.
Yes. Well, that's partially it. I mean, she's my favorite captain, hands down. Mm-hmm. And Picard is my least favorite, which is also an unpopular opinion.
That I would, we have to explore this. So let's explore. Well, first we'll explore Janeway, because I will admit, and I've said this before on the podcast, so people are sick of me saying it. But originally, when Voyager first came out, I was like, okay, well, it's new Star Trek. I'm very excited about new Star Trek. I started watching it. I didn't really like Janeway. And so that turned me off and I stopped watching it. So I started this podcast. I've had to rewatch a lot of Voyager episodes because the random Trek machine just loves Voyager. So I'm watching a lot of Voyager. And I've come to find out that past Scott was very foolish because Captain Janeway is, I think, bar none, the best character on Voyager.
She's amazing.
She is amazing.
She's so amazing. And it's, I think it's partially because she is a perfect balance of leadership and empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't really see that as much with the other captains.
No, you feel like she can, she empathizes with her crewmate. Like in this episode, what is it? I don't know how to spell it. Elogium, I think.
Elogium.
Something like that. Is a perfect example, right? She is, they are flying around trying to get home. They see some weird thing. And of course, the science officer part of Captain Janeway is like, oh, we have to check this out. So they check it out. But then the whole kind of subplot of this episode, well, this episode is all about sex. Let's just say that, is, you know, they're thinking about, should they ban fraternization and all that stuff? And at the end, we find out that a crew member is pregnant and she comes to the Captain Janeway and she's upset and she doesn't
know. Naomi Wildman alert.
Yes. And she doesn't know how Captain Janeway will react. And Captain Janeway, of course, is concerned, but obviously she says congratulations. And the episode ends on a shot of Janeway's face looking both concerned for the crewman, but also for, you know, the child that is to be. And I think that perfectly sums up Janeway.
Yep.
Also, another great scene is when Janeway kind of talks her way into, and we'll get to the episode, but she talks her way into, Kes has hold herself up in the, doctor's office.
In some force field.
Yeah. And then Janeway, Neelix can't get in. The doctor obviously can't get in because he does not have a great bedside manner. And Janeway comes up and she basically says like two things and she gets in and calms Kes down, which I thought was a little ridiculous, but it shows her empathy in the way she can talk to her crew.
Yeah. But she also feels empathy toward the aliens that they encounter over the course of the series in a way that, and that a lot of the crew do not. Like, in this particular episode, B'Elanna, of course, because she's part Klingon, has to be the Hulk smash and like kill them because they're bad and they're hurting us. You know,
well, at a certain point,
this episode has problems, but
this episode has made problems, but at a certain point, I kind of felt like, shouldn't they maybe try and, you know, try to get out of this a little more? But Janeway's like, no, they're indigenous aliens. We're not going to hurt them. They were just hanging out. It's our fault for being here, which I understand. And she sticks to her guns because she's the captain and that's what she does.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. Janeway, great. Not my favorite captain. Not my least favorite captain. Captain Archer, paging Captain Archer. I don't like Captain Archer. But your least favorite captain, Captain Picard, who, if you ask many people, is their favorite captain.
I know.
It's usually either Kirk or Picard.
Right. And I love Patrick Stewart. I just thought I should say that. I think he's tremendous. I've seen him do Shakespeare in person, and it was one of the most magical experiences of my life. I find him to be delightful and a supremely talented actor.
He is a fantastic actor. Although,
it's just Picard that I don't like.
Well, Picard does not have much empathy.
No, he doesn't. And he has little to no empathy, and yet this is my problem with Next Gen, is that they literally had to create an android with no emotions to make Picard look human.
I don't know if that's quite true, but it is amusing. He is quite buttoned down, let's say.
Yeah.
Good old Picard. He doesn't like children. He doesn't want to deal with kind of the softer side of being a captain. And that's why he has Riker, right? So Riker goes off and he deals with any personnel issues. Captain Picard just does whatever Captain Picard does.
Yeah.
Negotiates things and makes grand statements. I often think about what captain I would want to. So I don't often think about it, but every once in a while I think about what captain I'd want to serve under. And I don't think I would want to serve under Picard just because I think all of his crew seem frightened of talking to him.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to end up in the turbo lift alone with Captain Picard.
Yeah.
Unless you're senior staff, right? Cause then everybody else, you don't want to look at him. You're afraid he's going to yell at you. You don't want to disappoint him.
You'd be like, does he even know my name? I mean,
and if he does know my name, right? And if he does know my name, why does he know my name? Cause he probably shouldn't. Whereas I feel like, I would like to serve under Captain Janeway cause she seems nice. And, I wouldn't want to serve under Kirk cause I feel like I would die immediately.
Yeah, although I will say with Janeway, and I believe she talks about this in some episodes, that she kind of changes tack in terms of her behavior as a captain because of their situation.
Mm-hmm.
And that she is more open and slowly becomes more open with the crew over the course of the series because she feels like she has to be given their isolation.
Right, and that's a big point in this episode, right? Because they are they're stranded 75 years away from home. And they're pretty much, these are the only humans, certainly.
They're going to pair off.
Exactly. It's going to happen. Chakotay is a little nervous about it because he wants to see if they can maybe think about banning fraternization. And Captain Janeway is like, well, Starfleet doesn't like to tell people what to do in their personal lives. This is it. This is all we have, right? Unless we pick up another Neelix, but he already came with his own girlfriend. So. Plus, he's Neelix.
Which is so weird. Relationship is so weird.
Let's talk about Neelix and Kes.
Let me just preface this by saying that very recently I spent a good deal of time defending Voyager to somebody who hates it, like for a good couple hours of mm-hmm. back and forth on Instant Messenger. But the one thing that I could concede was that Neelix was terrible. And I agreed with that. And so, of course, when the randomization came, I got a Neelix Kes-based episode of Voyager, which I think was karma.
It is karma. This is when I read I had no memory of this episode. I may have seen it before, but I had no memory of it. Mm-hmm. So I read the little synopsis and I was like, oh, great. Neelix heavy. And I don't really like Kes all that much, mostly because she is, she tags along with Neelix, and Neelix, I feel like, has poisoned the well there.
Yeah, it was funny because when Voyager was announced and they had the cast list and everything, I saw her name on it and I was actually pleasantly, surprised and happy she was on the show because I had seen her on this one season sitcom called Phenom about a tennis star. And she played like the older brother's girlfriend / fiance. But so I was like, oh, hey, Jennifer Leanne's on this show.
And this show killed her career.
Killed her. The whole thing is tragic, but.
I don't know. She may be a talented actress. I have no idea, but, I don't know if Kes was her best work. And this episode in particular has some poor choices. I don't know if it's from her or from the director.
Oh God. Some of her acting in this is just painful. And again, I think your point is good and maybe she was directed that way, but. Oh, there's some very painful moments in this episode.
Yeah, and it makes I kind of want to like Kes because I like the idea of Kes.
It's really cool.
Yes, but the reality of Kes, not so great. And then, of course, she's like she's not 2 years old, and yet she has Neelix as her boyfriend, and it's just weird. Although I know she's an alien and they mature at different rates, whatever, but I still think it's weird.
Yeah. I found it interesting, though, that – so she's not quite 2 years old – and in this episode, we find out that their version of puberty, the eulogium, happens around age 4.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, why does she have a boyfriend?
Well, that's true. Well, it wasn't clear to me if the... So, Captain Janeway calls it puberty, but I feel like it's more of like a Ponfar analog.
Maybe. Yeah.
Where she's ready to mate. Although I don't know if she mates outside of that. I don't really want to think about it because she would do it with Kes and with Neelix.
And
that's,
Zach.
Yeah,
and,
I don't
know.
But... So I assume it is just when she's fertile and able to have a child, or procreate, as Chakotay says. I was like, wow, very scientific Chakotay. Calm down a little bit there, Chakotay. So Neelix is problematic because he's a bad character. He's annoying. And in this episode also.
Oh, and he's a space violator in the worst way.
He's a close talker.
Yes.
I don't like Neelix. But he is a snazzy dresser.
That is true.
Points for style, Neelix. But in this episode also, I thought, so often it's kind of a trope in Star Trek, right, that they come to some kind of alien or some anomaly, and there's a field that is causing people to act weirdly.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I thought was happening, and it kind of does happen.
Because just to her and nobody else.
Just to her, and it has more of a biological thing. So Neelix, in the beginning of this episode, is acting so crazily jealous that I thought, clearly, he's being under the influence of something.
And you're like, nope, that's just Neelix.
No, he's just a jerk.
Yep.
Because the episode starts with, Kes is bringing Neelix some cabbage, which my wife pointed out is not actually cabbage, it's mustard greens. So for people out there that like to identify produce, not really cabbage. Tom Paris, I guess, was there and offered to help. And so he brings it and they're come in and they're talking and they're chatting and laughing and whatever. And they give Neelix the cabbage. And Neelix is immediately like, how dare you, Kes? You love Tom Paris now, don't you? And I was like... Calm down there, Neelix. Maybe she should go out with Tom Paris.
Maybe she should.
Yeah, and then he's also, later on, when he goes down to the sick bay, because Kes is eating everything in sight, he is very mean to the doctor.
Including the beetles. Oh, God, that was awful.
We should talk about that scene. So they set up the beetles, because there was a beetle on the cabbage that she brought up to Neelix. And that's the thing that sets him off. And he's like, oh, why is there a beetle on this cabbage? Captain Janeway wouldn't like a beetle in her salad. And Kes is like, chill out, man. And then she goes back to hydroponics to tend to her cabbages and beetles. I guess these beetles are very important. And we find out something's up because she has a box full of these beetles, right? And she places one on a cabbage. And you think, okay, well, she's just doing her job. Then she takes a whole handful of them, and you assume she's going to sprinkle them on the bed there. But no, she shoves them into her mouth. And at which point I thought to myself, she's an alien, so maybe she just eats these beetles.
Yeah.
But this is a point at which, the actress who plays Kes, perhaps does a poor job because.
That wide eye thing. She does this two or three times over the course of the episode.
It's not good. It's very cartoonish. No. It's like her eyes would pop out if she were a cartoon and she would go, when she realizes that she's just eaten, I guess two handfuls. The second handful, she realizes that she's just eaten a bunch of beetles. And that's when you think, she probably doesn't normally eat these beetles.
No.
We find out later, spoiler alert, she's, eating crazy food because she is fertile.
I was with her with the mashed potatoes though. Those are good.
Mashed potatoes are delicious. She has seven bowls of mashed potatoes. Neelix doesn't like them. And then you think, oh, another reason why I should hate Neelix.
Exactly. If you don't like mashed potatoes, there is something wrong with you. And I don't care if you're not human and your species isn't designed to like mashed potatoes. You're wrong.
But that is when Kes tells him, oh, I also mixed in some soil with these mashed potatoes.
Right.
So you're like, okay, well, maybe I'll cut Neelix some slack because I don't think I'd want dirt in my mashed potatoes. We skipped over the other thing that's happening. So there are a couple of plots here, right?
There's like the A and the B and the C plot are all about sex.
They're all about sex. All of them are. Yeah. So Kes is, strangely entering into puberty or Ponfar or whatever her fertile season. There are a bunch of space aliens that they came across that are space-born living organisms that are just kind of hanging out in space and, you know, floating around doing their space thing.
I thought it was funny that I forget who says it, but it's some, maybe it was Harry Kim who says, they're flagellating like protozoa. And I'm like, no, they're flagellating like sperm. Can we just say they're sperm?
Well, we could say that. I don't know if Voyager could at that time. But yes, they do clearly look like, they're kind of pink. So they're kind of like pink sperm just kind of floating out in space, a big cloud of them. And Captain Janeway, I don't know if this is symbolism or anything, but cannot resist but to check out this cloud. Although this is before they knew it was sperm-like aliens. And they find out, and so Janeway wants to check them out. Chakotay also wants to check them out. He requests permission to go, you know, closer to check them out. And Janeway's like, sure. So Tom Paris moves the ship a little closer. And then they get sucked in because these aliens create some kind of magnetic field that pulls in Voyager. And so now they're stuck in the middle of seemingly millions of these little tiny space aliens that are just cavorting about, which is a problem. And they want to get out, but Janeway doesn't want to kill any of them, so they can't warp out, and so they have to figure out ways to do it. And this is when B'Elanna's like, why don't we just kill them? They're stupid. Yeah. We hate them. And Janeway's like, well, let's figure something out. And then later, I guess we'll just deal with this plot, because this is like the silliest of them all. Along comes a giant, one of these sperm aliens, who attracts some of the little ones. And then some of the other little ones are attracted and attach themselves to Voyager's warp nacelles.
I did think this aspect of it was a little bit interesting. And I'm going to say that they didn't plan this aspect of it, because I don't think they planned this episode very well at all. But that they referred to the large creature as he.
Oh.
And I thought that was interesting, because in most of these sorts of scenarios, the large creature is a she.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
You know, like a mama bear. Yep. Or, you know, the queen bee, or, you know, like especially in the insect world, the primary creature is generally female.
That's true. And this makes me think that it never even occurred to them, or they didn't suggest
this. I know, they didn't think this through. I'm thinking this through, but they did not.
I know, but it makes it interesting, because, you know, they would think, oh, maybe these are its babies and it's here to protect them. But they don't think that at all.
No, they don't. They just assume the big one's a he.
Which is, if like you're saying, if they planned it, kind of cool, but they probably didn't plan it.
No.
But we
I'm not giving them that much credit.
Let's pretend they planned it. And so they figure out that this creature emits similar subspace frequencies as their warp nacelles, which Chakotay likens to pheromones. And then I think Janeway says, oh, that means you think they find us attractive. And so the little ones are trying to basically mate with Voyager. But Voyager obviously not compatible with them, because it's a ship and not space sperm. So that's a problem there. And it seems like when they're trying to mate with Voyager, they're sucking out all the energy from Voyager, so leading to bad things happening all over the ship.
Yeah, just like Neelix sucks the energy out of the show.
That is true. Leading to bad things all over the show.
Yeah.
And they figure out, basically, that they need to... first they try and... The big one starts ramming Voyager because it wants to, you know, stake its claim. And they think, well, let's ram it back. And then Chakotay's like, well, maybe we should just be submissive and it'll leave us alone. And so it turns out Chakotay's right. Hooray. Good going, Chakotay. They pretend to go back on their basically their belly in Voyager, not all the characters on Voyager. That would be weird. And then basically they convince the little ones that, they are not a good mate, and that the big space sperm is the one they should mate with, and they go off and everybody's happy and Voyager gets out. And it leads to a very funny moment where Captain Janeway says, Chakotay, good job, Chakotay. If I have any questions about mating, I know who to go to.
Oh, you know, here's the thing. Their flirting is so good.
It is.
It really is. And I enjoyed that aspect of this episode. Like, if you had to pull one thing out of this episode, there's some really good Chakotay Janeway flirting time. And it just breaks my heart even more that somehow he winds up with 7 of 9, which was so stupid. I will say, like, Janeway and Chakotay belonged together.
It is true. They are. Well, but Janeway already has Mark in the back at home, so...
I know. She was fiercely loyal to Mark for some reason.
She hardly ever mentions him, but every once in a while, she... We see a picture of him in this episode with a dog, so I thought that was nice. But yeah, she basically... So Chakotay and her have a conversation about fraternization, and she basically says, well, you know, we're the only humans in 75 years, so... 75 light years, so it's going to happen, Chakotay. We can't fight it. And Chakotay says, oh, does the same, this is one of the little flirty moments. And he's like, does the same, you know, privilege, he doesn't say privilege, but the same thing applied to the captain. And she says no, because, well, two reasons. She's the captain, so she can't do that. And B, she has Mark and she wants to get back to him before he gives her up for dead. Which was nice, but sad for Chakotay. He's not Mark.
He's probably better than Mark.
Well, what do you feel about Chakotay? People often give Chakotay guff as a character, so I want to hear your thoughts on Chakotay.
I like him. I see why people say that about him. I do think that he served a really good purpose at the beginning of the series with sort of being that buffer between Starfleet and the Maquis.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he does do a good job as a first officer in terms of explaining Janeway's decisions to everybody else. And that, because sometimes Janeway does things that people don't understand. And they're smart and they're the right thing to do because she's Janeway.
Right.
But sometimes people don't understand the decisions at the time. So he does a good job, I think, as first officer in that aspect.
And my main problem with Chakotay is not the character of Chakotay. It is what the writers do with the character of Chakotay.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, they always have these stupid pseudo Native American episodes that are Chakotay centric with lucid dreaming and all kinds of things. And I'm just like, come on. You could let Chakotay be something other than the Native American lucid dreamer. He could be a little more interesting, but they never decide to do that. Makes me sad. Angers me.
On the other side, I do think that this, like, Voyager in general does the best job with the Borg of any of the series, and I think does the best job with Q of any of the series.
Oh, that's an interesting thing. Yeah, because so Q and Picard have this weird relationship.
Right. But Q and Janeway are, like, magic.
It's true. And Q and Sisko just doesn't have any time for Q. So it doesn't really work. He is not entertained in the least by Q. I do, one of my favorite Q moments, which is not Voyager related, but I do like Janeway and Q, is when Q first shows up on Deep Space Nine and Sisko punches him. And Q is like, Picard never hit me. And Sisko says, well, I'm not Picard. I just thought that's a wonderful Q moment, but not on Voyager. Although the Q has that where they go to the Q Continuum and Voyager and they try and figure out what's going on. Mm-hmm. That's a good episode.
Yeah, that's a great episode. And I like with the Q Sun episode.
Oh, yes.
That's a good one. And
this episode.
I feel like they would make a really good Odd Couple remake, the two of them.
Are you like a sitcom with Janeway and Q?
Yeah.
So Janeway is the neat one, I assume. Mm-hmm. Q is, what, Oscar? Am I getting my Odd Couples right? It's Oscar and
Felix.
Felix, there you go. Felix is the neat one, Oscar's the messy one. Yeah. I could see that happening.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll be what the new Star Trek series is that CBS is working on, Janeway and Q.
I'd pay money for that.
I would too. But well, now we're talking about characters. Let's touch on. I'm curious. I know your favorite character in Voyager obviously is Janeway because she's your favorite captain. I'm assuming that could be an erroneous assumption. But let's rank the characters. Maybe not all of them. But what are your couple of other favorite characters from Voyager?
You know, I love Seven of Nine, and I think that she was a much better exploration of what Data was meant to be in a lot of ways.
Well, she comes at it. So I have this theory that every series kind of has a Data character, which is really a Spock character.
Right.
Being honest.
Yeah. I just think they finally got it right.
Well, she has she goes back to the Spock kind of archetype, right? Because she's half human. Well, she's all human, but she's also Borg, so she has this half and half kind of thing. Whereas Data was trying to get into that same hole, right? But he had no humanity whatsoever, and he was just basically Pinocchio who wanted to be a real boy. Seven of Nine has this much more interesting thing where she was a human. Well, she still is, but she was, you know, unmodified, and then she became the Borg, and so she's very loyal to the Borg, and that's, you know, kind of what she thought she should be. And then she goes through this great development with Janeway, honestly, who convinces her basically that she should embrace her humanity, and maybe being a Borg isn't all it was cracked up to be. And so she has a great character arc, which Data doesn't really have a character arc because he's always just trying to be human, but he never will be. So it's kind of not much of a payoff there.
Yeah, and I know like this ties it back to Janeway, but having a scene with Janeway automatically makes any character look better, I think. And especially, I found the relationship between Janeway and B'Elanna to be just lovely over the course of the series. And, you know, B'Elanna went, I think, you know, this is earlier in the series. I think it's the second season, early second season.
Yes.
And so B'Elanna was still a little bit cardboardish with the, you know, her Klingon side and her human side. And but, you know, she grows over the course of the series and grows to appreciate both aspects of her self a little bit more and doesn't have the self-loathing of the Klingon side. Although she does a little bit. She's worried about the baby having the ridges and all that. But
And she falls for Tom Paris, who is one of my least favorite characters on the show. So,
see, I think Tom's okay. I mean, you know, he's a little swashbuckly rebel kid, but
it's true. He's a bit of a bro.
Yeah, I mean, he's a little bit of bro's a good word.
No offense to the bros who are listening, but Tom Paris is a Star Trek bro. So,
I think he was adventurous in a way that show needed.
Yeah, he was a little reckless.
But he also, I think, was fiercely loyal.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes to his own detriment.
That's true. He gets shot.
He gets shot. He disobeys orders. He loses his rank.
Mm-hmm.
But he does it for what he thinks are the right reasons. And so that's why I like Tom Paris.
I don't, he's not my least favorite character because,
is it, other than Neelix, Harry Kim?
It is Harry Kim. I despise Harry Kim.
Yeah.
And I don't really know why. It's just that he doesn't really add anything and he just annoys me all the time. At least with Neelix, I feel like they meant for him to be kind of annoying. He has that going for him.
Well, it seems like they meant for him to be a bit of a con artist. But it turned into annoying.
Yes, he quickly goes from, you know, being this, you know, itinerant traitor who is up to whatever he's up to, looking out for number one.
Right.
And then just kind of being this obsequious.
Like a poor man's Ferengi.
Yes, exactly. This obsequious chief morale officer who cooks stuff for people.
Yeah, like he had to have a title.
Yes, because he's that annoying.
To like live day to day, he had to have some stupid title.
And that's a good episode where Janeway is like, fine, you'll be the chief morale officer or whatever they call him. She's like, just leave me alone.
Yeah.
Because you're a good cook.
Yeah. Of course, I love the Doctor.
Oh, I mean, well, how could you not?
Yeah. I mean, Robert Picardo. I mean, I loved him on China Beach so much. That was one of my favorite shows. And so, again, I was thrilled that he was going to be on Star Trek. And he just nailed it with the Doctor.
And he also, you know, I like Brent Spiner. I like Data as a character. But I feel like, once again, Data was shoehorned or roadblocked by the fact that there's no real way that his character could develop at all. Whereas the Doctor, over the course of the seven seasons, you know, season one Doctor is very different from season seven Doctor.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it so great to watch him kind of develop and become a character and become more than just, you know, a bad bedside doctor, but a bad bedside doctor who also has a personality.
Yeah.
Which I like.
Yeah. And you know what? I can say in this episode, Tuvok is actually pretty solid in this episode.
Tuvok and Neelix have a very nice scene.
You know, he's giving advice about potential parenthood.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a nice moment with him and Neelix.
I like Tuvok. I feel like they never really do much with Tuvok, which I think Tim Russ is kind of wasted in this.
Yeah, and he's very level-headed, consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's a good Vulcan.
Yeah, although at the end when he had, you know, early onset Vulcan Alzheimer's.
That's true.
Yeah.
I guess to do a little more with him. And I saw him on Castle recently, Tim Russ. And I thought, Tuvok! Oh, hi, Tuvok. I'm sure he hates that. But actually, I don't think he does. He shows up and he's, I think, recreated his Tuvok character. Yeah. So I'm sure he doesn't hate it. But he probably would prefer I not think immediately when I see him on another show playing a different character, hey, it's Tuvok. And then it wasn't Tuvok. And then I was sad. Although I did really like one of my favorite episodes of Voyager is when Tuvok talks about how he served on the Excelsior with Captain Sulu.
Oh, yeah.
So that was
a great one.
I love that episode. And that's a Tuvok heavy episode, so hooray for that.
Yeah.
What other characters have we left behind? So we don't like I don't like Harry Kim just because he's kind of a non-entity. He doesn't really – he's annoying.
Although I will say the episode that's right after this in the series, which is the one where Harry wakes up in San Francisco and is, you know, as if he had never gone on Voyager, is a really good one. And I think you can appreciate Harry in it.
Oh, well, maybe I don't have any memory of this, so maybe I should watch that episode.
Mm.
And apparently, and here's a little something I read on the internet, so it must be true. The actor who played Harry Kim was going to leave Voyager, or they were going to kill him off, actually. And then he was voted one of people's sexiest people alive for that year, and they were like, okay, we got to keep him on Voyager. So he stayed, and they did not kill Harry Kim. So that's a little fun fact that I probably already said on this podcast because it amuses me.
Oh, no. That's funny.
But I don't care.
I'm not aware of that.
We'll see that again. And I think we've talked about all the characters that I can think of from Voyager. I always forget somebody, but I think that's all of them. So we should get back to this episode and talk about –
like the incidentals.
Exactly. We dealt with the space sperm. We have to deal with Kes and Neelix. I think we kind of stopped talking about them because we don't like them. But they are central to this episode.
Right.
So basically, Kes goes into her fertile season, Ponvar, puberty, whatever you want to call it. And she really has this biological imperative that she must have a child. And in her species, you only go into this once, so it's now or never.
Mm-hmm.
And she wants to have the kid with Neelix, and Neelix... I think rightfully is kind of like, could I think about it? Cause, you know, she kind of sprung it on him. I don't think they were talking about it. Kes didn't think this was going to happen for another couple of years. So, why bring it up now? But now they have to because she's in the throes of it, right? And so then Neelix goes off and he ponders if he should, you know, if he's ready to have a kid. He talks to Tuvok and I have this really great scene where Tuvok says, you know, fatherhood is, even more complicated than you think it possibly could be. But then on the other hand, you get, untold rewards from it, even though that's illogical. It's just the truth. And I really like the part where Neelix is like, well, maybe having a boy around wouldn't be so bad. I could teach him all this stuff, and it would be great. And then Tuvok says, well, you know, you also have an equal chance of having a daughter.
And then Tuvok's like, what if it's a girl?
Yes, and Neelix is like, what? That would be awful. I would have nothing to teach her.
Daughter.
What would I do? That would be the worst thing ever. And Tuvok just shuts that down. And he's like, you just teach her the same things. I have a daughter. I have three sons. They both get as much out of their relationship with me as they do with their mother. You are an idiot, Neelix.
How heavy-handed was that?
It was pretty heavy-handed, but I feel like it needed to be said.
Sitcoms or like your a family drama have right. this episode. Like every single one of them.
The more you know.
Yeah. Where it's like, oh, like where a woman thinks she might be pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And then the boyfriend/husband starts panicking about it and talks to all his friends. And then,
and then goes out and buys a football.
Mad at him, and he gets mad at her. And then, you know, suddenly they're like both okay with it. And then it turns out she's not pregnant.
Yes. And then along the way, he buys like some kind of sports equipment. And he's like, boy, it'll be great if you have a son around.
Yeah,
and then she's like, well, it could be a daughter. And then there's like that wah, wah, wah music.
Yeah.
And so basically that's what this is. Although it's interesting because Cass is not pregnant. She could just perhaps become pregnant. Yeah. And then after Neelix talks to Tuvok, he's like, okay, Tuvok, Mr. Vulcan, which it annoys me every time Neelix calls Tuvok Mr. Vulcan, but he does anyway. He's like, if he can do it.
He forgets his name.
That would be sad, but it amuses me. He's like, well, okay, well, maybe it's not so bad. Maybe it's a good thing, actually. So he runs off to tell Kess, buy the diapers, we're having a baby. I'm gonna make you pregnant. He doesn't say that, but basically that's what he means. And then Kess is all like,
And then she's like, first I would have to get a parent to rub my feet. Okay.
And I will say, I really liked Neelix's reaction to that. And yeah. He's like, where are you going to find a parent? And then she's like, well, I would have Captain Janeway do it if she wasn't so busy, but I guess the doctor will be fine. And so she goes off to talk to the doctor. And this is another heavy-handed part where she, you know, she leaves and then she turns back and hesitates. And then she turns once more to go through the door, but then she turns back again. And you think, okay, we get it. You're having second thoughts. Now that Neelix is on board, you're not so sure if it's a great idea. You don't have to telegraph it so hard. But then they continue telegraphing it because she goes down to the doctor and she basically says it. Now that Neelix is on board, I'm not so sure if it's a good idea.
Yeah.
And the doctor's like, how about some statistics?
Yeah.
I can't really help you with this.
I thought this was also a little heavy-handed with the women, right? They always change their damn minds.
Sheesh, and the shopping.
Oh, that was bad. Yeah.
Yes, it was kind of like Kess was all for it. She was like, doing major guilt on Neelix, and she's like, I can't believe you just don't want to have a kid with me. You're putting up all these roadblocks. You're awful. Which I also thought was kind of stereotypical and problematic.
Yeah.
And then she had, once he's like, okay, you want to do this? I want to do it. Let's do this. And she's like, I don't know. On second thought. Not so much. And then it turns out she decides that she does not. She's not ready to have a kid. And Neelix, of course, is bummed out because he was all on board with it now. But Kess has decided it's not going to happen. And it basically, the episode, there's another thing that we could talk about. This part of the plot ends with she comes and asks Neelix if she can help cook. And he's like, well, I don't really need any help. And she's like, you've been acting weird. And he's like, well, you basically said you don't want my kid after you guilted me into really wanting a kid. And she says, well, the doctor says maybe it'll happen again. So maybe this was a false puberty, and she might go into regular puberty. And that's the end of that. And Neelix seems okay with that.
Is that a happy ending? I don't know.
It's an ending.
It's an ending.
And we don't have to think about Neelix having sex with anyone for a while, so that's good.
Phew, crisis averted.
The episode ends with Ensign Wildman coming to talk to Captain Janeway, which we actually talked about at the beginning of this podcast, and telling her she's pregnant. And Captain Janeway's like, well, congratulations. And then she's worried about what this means.
End.
And that's the end. So that's this episode of Voyager. A lot of sex.
There isn't really any sex.
There's no sex. Well, actually, I guess. Well, I don't know.
They just talk about sex.
There's a lot of talk of sex.
But nobody gets to actually have any.
That is true.
Maybe that random couple in the elevator at the beginning.
Oh, yeah. They probably had some sex. And maybe the space sperm were having sex with Voyager. Although I guess it's not compatible. So that really, they were attempting to have sex. But a lot of frustrated characters on this episode. So what did you overall, what did you think? Now, knowing that Voyager is your favorite series, what did you think of this episode?
Yeah, this was such a bad egg. Oh, my God. It's terrible.
Yeah, this is...
Like I said, you can pull out little moments of joy in it, like the Neelix Tuvok scene and the little flirty with Janeway, you know. But, it's so heavy-handed. The dialogue is painful. Kess's acting is painful.
Oh, so bad.
And it's, like, usually, I mean, this is just my gut. I don't know if it's true, but when you have, like, you know, your A, B, and then maybe there's a C plot, there's at least one of them that's about something different a little bit. And if there's a little bit of a thread that ties it together, but not, but this was every single plot line was about sex or procreation.
Yeah.
And you're just like, come on, like, let's give me some variety. And like, there's like very little for Tom Paris to do. There's very little for B'Elanna to do. Mm-hmm. Harry wasn't there much other than to help with the figuring out what these little creatures were.
He scans some stuff, as Harry Kim does in so many episodes.
So, I mean, I know Voyager does this, though, to be fair, is that they have a lot more of these individual or one or two character centric shows, I think, than some of the other series do.
That's true. Unfortunately, this one focused on Neelix and Kes, which is off the bat not a good sign. Well, Rachel, I'm sorry that the random Trek generator picked this episode, but I am glad that you agreed to be on, and I think we had a great conversation, so thank you so much.
You're quite welcome. This was fun.
Next on Random Trek, Deep Space Nine, Season 2, Episode 22, The Wire.